holy crap, the way they do graphical representation is not standardized at all.
No, it's not standardized.
Yeah, every new paper, you're like, why was this the graph of choice?
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Chemist Confessions podcast. I'm Victoria.
And I'm Gloria.
And this is a human conversation on all the skincare science we talk about on the daily. And today is a big one. We are talking about niacinamide.
Good night. I feel like it's something that we talked about a lot throughout the years that we've been doing this. But I think because it's so buzzy, it seems to be a lot of products, but there's still a lot of confusion as to what it might do for you. It seems like such a catch-all ingredient that's in all sorts of different types of products, from hyperpigmentation to anti-aging. So I think today, let's just debunk one of the biggest myths. The number one myth you'll run across when shopping for niacinamide is, everything is 10%. Is that a lot?
Yeah. And I think before we even get started, we should talk about what even is niacinamide. So niacinamide is vitamin B3. Think of it as just another essential nutrient that's actually incredibly important in for our bodies to function and is contributes to, I guess, a lot of our metabolic processes. Probably the reason why it gets tied to a lot of, I guess, so many of the skin benefits out there is because it functions as a precursor to NADH and NADPH. And if you're wondering, why does that sound so familiar and yet so painful?
It's because... Yes, high school bio does ring a bell.
Exactly. If you ever had to study redox reactions, this would be the one that you probably use or look at a lot as an example. And because it's such a fundamental process, basically NADH and NADPH are these coenzymes that are tied to so many of our body functions, but in skin... functions as a cofactor in the synthesis of fatty acids and more complex lipids like ceramide. So this might be why you might hear niacinamide is touted as a ceramide precursor.
Yeah, precursor I feel like is not quite the right word, but you know, here in the skincare realm, who cares about the precision word? But yes.
Just tie everything together.
Yes.
Yeah, so and then NADH has been observed to inhibit some of the enzymes involved in the synthesis of glycosaminoglycans, and they usually tie it as a GAGS, G-A-G-S. Mm-hmm. And so if you think about that, you might have heard it when we talk about hyaluronic acid. Mm-hmm. It's actually one of the GAGs out there that are very important in skin. So those are the two main processes. Because of that, niacinamide's role gets touted to be connected to increase in stratum corneum ceramides, improvement in skin barrier function, as well as improvement in wrinkles.
Yeah, that is basically why it gets a reputation as a catch-all, because it is an important part of your skin biological function. And it does seem like it does everything, right? It's a really wide range, right? It goes from anything like inhibition of sebum production, therefore you might find it in your oily skincare products, mm-hmm. or as a sidekick, even your acne products. Yeah. I think the one that a lot of oily skin people perk up is also, it's one of the very, very few ingredients that have data on reducing pore size.
Yeah.
And we do really like niacinamide's role also in hyperpigmentation,
yes.
because we'll get into it in some other episode with that's more hyperpigmentation focused. Yeah, it functions in a very different biological pathway than a lot of other common hyperpigmentation actives, which makes it very, very layer friendly. It can even be anti-wrinkle. It just does everything. But where are the limitations? And this is where it gets a little crazy, because it gets put into all these products for its multifunction. It gets to be a little much.
Totally. The reason why we are sharing about NADH and NADPH is because what's actually looked at in providing those skin benefits is like NADH, NADPH. They're looking at this process, this mechanism, and it's basically think of it as a foundation that kickstarts a lot of these processes. And I'm going to share a table here that I found in a very nice niacinamide chapter. You'll see that it's basically saying niacinamide effect ex vivo, in vitro. And you'll see that it's tied to a bunch of things that Gloria had just mentioned, and even more: anti-inflammatory, increased production of collagen. They talk about hyperpigmentation, even protein glycation. But I definitely want to highlight that you'll see here, all of these aspects are linked to the benefit, and it goes postulated skin appearance benefits. And that's because, and I just want to remind everyone that it's because that niacinamide itself has not really been proven for a lot of these. It's actually a theory, a working theory that may have some in vitro data. Just want to say that it's, I think some of it has definitely gotten carried away, and they even have an updated table of newly discovered mechanisms that have things like UV inhibition. They even have, they say, metabolic oscillator for circadian rhythm regulation, which apparently is tied to skin barrier health. So I just want to say, I think this table, I think this table is a good example of how carried away niacinamide benefits can be. Yeah, keyword is postulated here.
Yeah, and I also think that, I think it goes both ways, right? It's pretty cool that this one molecule, because it's tied to one of the most fundamental cell metabolic processes in biology, that's also part of, that's part of why it's linked to so many different things. But in each of these pathways, like if you're talking about inflammation or anti-wrinkle, it's one part of it, right? So I think that's the thing that people get carried away with these potential connections. It's like, oh, okay, niacinamide does it all. Let me just throw out that retinol and call it a day.
Yeah, but that's such a good point.
Yeah, it's just one facet of it, but it's still pretty interesting. And we'll get into it in the next part. The good thing is some of these benefits, there's clinical tests on topical use on niacinamide, where we'll get into some of the fancy extract episodes, you'll realize that a lot of it kind of stays in the postulated lane.
Those episodes are gonna be so short.
Yeah, you think our episodes are 30 minutes to 45 minutes. When we get there, it's gonna be like 15 minutes. Hello! Goodbye!
Yeah, exactly. And I think just to sum up, so to know that, what is niacinamide? It's a vitamin. It's one thing to know is that the reason why it gets put into everything is, yes, because of these benefits, this alleged benefits that it's tied to, but also because as chemists, we can tell you it's probably the easiest active you can work with.
Yeah.
And that's also why you may see some very high percentages out there. So
monkeys can formulate with niacinamide. Well, when we talk about retinol, I think Victoria and I did a bit about why you need a chemist, you know, it needs to be maybe encapsulated, the stability of it, support ingredients, a type of emulsion that goes into. There's a lot of nuance to that. Niacinamide, nah, you can just toss it in.
Yeah, you don't need a chemist for that.
Yeah, you don't even need to think about when to toss it in. You can forget about it, be like, oh my God, I'm almost done with my cream. Oh my God, niacinamide. And they sprinkle it and you'll be fine. That's how boring it is formulation-wise.
Yes, and because of that, before niacinamide got the spotlight, it really functioned as a chemist insurance policy to make sure you could get some sort of benefit. So hopefully that gives you an idea of what it is and why it's so interesting in skincare. But after this, we're going to talk about what niacinamide actually does for skin and if you're getting too much. But before that, a quick break. Speaking of things with niacinamide, we, the responsible chemists, happen to give you a responsible amount of niacinamide in The Specialist. This AHA BHA exfoliator was designed for the oily skin, congested, blackhead-minded individuals out there. Or maybe you're just a salicylic acid or mandelic acid fan. This deep blue gel treatment has 18% mandelic acid, 2% salicylic acid, and 5% niacinamide. Sounds like a lot? Well, there's actually a reason behind it.
When we designed The Specialist, we wanted it to be used in multiple ways. In fact, The Specialist can be used three ways. You can either add a drop to your moisturizer, spot treat directly on your blackhead zone, or just use it as a weekly 15-minute wash-off mask. Make The Specialist do work for your skin the way you want it to. And don't forget, for all podcast listeners and viewers, please use the code CCPODCAST2024 for 15% off your first order.
We're back. And now it's time to answer the question, are you using too much niacinamide?
Probably. But yeah, no, we've noticed that it became like a dick measuring contest. Like, oh, wow, I see that there's 4%, but what if we up it to 10%?
I don't know how 10 became the magic number.
It's like the standard.
I really don't. There is no paper out there that suggests that 10% should be the goal. Did not know what the plan was.
Yeah, so there's 10% and the ones that's out there and became the new standard. People are like, but I have 15. Yeah. And just keeps going up from there. I think the craziest one we've seen is like 20%.
Yeah. And then I think there was the Peter Thomas Roth. They
had something like a 30%.
Yeah. And we weren't sure.
Yeah. But, I don't know what that does for you, but.
And I think that's the thing is like, there's so much mystery around what does niacinamide actually do? I think people have like kind of forgotten what the benefits were. Mm-hmm. So we did the research so you didn't have to. We're actually going to review and kind of blitz through because there's a lot. a few clinicals to just remind everybody about some of the benefits that niacinamide actually brings. Mm-hmm. So we're going to first head into the oily skin space, which is usually, I think, where a lot of the benefits come from first. So first thing is in sebum reduction. So I'm going to share this paper that came from Dr. Dralos, who's a big, big name in the skincare realm. In this study, it involves two separate clinical trials. This was conducted in both Japan and the US. They wanted to simply evaluate a topical 2% niacinamide product that would be used twice a day. For the Japanese study, they had 100 subjects.
Solid size.
Mm-hmm. And then for the US study, this was tested on Caucasian skin, 50 subjects.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so they wanted to simply look at the sebum excretion rate. This would be taken at T0, week 2, and week 4. The other thing I did want to point out, which I thought was kind of interesting, is the Japanese study, they were not split face. But the Caucasian study, they were split face.
Did they just run out of people and they're like, ah, man, we're going to double up?
Yeah, maybe they wanted to get that significance and, you know, that's the only way that's going to happen.
Right.
The other thing, because I think this study actually gets cited a lot, and what I don't think is known is that in this formula, it also contains 1% panthenol,
mm-hmm.
which I think is actually a very significant thing to forget to mention, because mm-hmm. panthenol itself does come with a lot of helpful properties.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, I just wanted to highlight that. In the Japanese study, I'm going to show the results here. Here they are looking at the sebum excretion rate over, like I said, T0, week 2, and week 4, and they did find a significant decrease in sebum excretion at the week 4 mark and the week 2. If you do side-by-side comparison, you'll look at the Caucasian study, and I don't know why, but they just, like, couldn't make the graphs, like, a little bit more correlated.
Today I feel like a bar graph, and tomorrow I want to do a line chart. Like, just whatever, man. Yeah.
So anyways, okay, but the results did demonstrate that the sebum excretion rate of the two groups, although it was not significantly different at baseline, the 2% niacinamide treated group was significantly lower at week 2 and week 4 of application.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the US study, after 6 weeks of treatment, they call it the CSL, but this is the casual sebum level.
What's a serious sebum level?
You're right. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Just the measurements.
This is the cat. Just
wipe off the nose.
Yeah.
Shiny, not shiny.
Okay.
Yeah. So casual sebum level was significantly reduced, mm-hmm. but the sebum excretion rate was not significantly reduced.
Interesting.
So, okay. Basically, when I look at these graphs, mm-hmm. and you can see that from placebo, mm-hmm. it's not quite different, right?
So we always like to look at the charts, right? So for example, the sebum excretion rate, they are using a unit milligrams or micrograms per centimeter square. And you're looking at a scale difference of like 120 versus say 160. What does that mean in terms of your feeling of greasiness? It's not well established there.
I gotta be honest, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And I totally agree. And so if you dig a little deeper, and it's kind of why we always caution people who actually attempt to try to read studies, is the abstract will only tell you a very surface level of information. This is the words that they write in their discussion. I found it kind of fascinating. Okay, so the group writes, sebum control studies are notoriously difficult to perform since facial sebum appears to decrease just because subjects are enrolled in a study.
I love that.
And I found
the
that
placebo
so
effect,
fascinating.
Yeah.
This phenomenon is seen in all clinical dermatology research.
I love it.
Certainly, the decrease in facial sebum from baseline in both the placebo group in Japan and the untreated side of the face in the US study mm-hmm. confirms this observation. This unexplained sebum decrease created problems in achieving statistical significance with several of the measurements.
You know, this is kind of a side note, but I was actually just listening to a podcast episode. I honestly forgot the podcast, but they're talking about the placebo effect in medicine and how, like, the power of belief and the placebo effect is incredibly strong. And it's so interesting to see that it correlates in skincare as well. Because I think they're doing something in terms of like, they did a short, I remember that. It's Radiolab, and they did a short sting on this lady who has really severe mosquito bites, and they have she's like tried everything, but every time she gets bitten and nothing works, it's just like really bad. I get really bad mosquito bites, so I listen to that too. And there's a bug sucker thingamabob. It's basically just a
suction cup.
It's a suction cup, yeah. And then the idea is it's supposed to suck out. I think it makes more sense for stuff like bee stings or whatever when there's something that might be left in there. Yeah. And for mosquito bite, I have used it before. I'm like, I don't know what it's supposed to do. And she was like, I swear, like, this works for me. Like, that's the only thing that works. And then she talked to specialists that looked at doing these kind of research, like pain and like itchiness research. And they're like, yeah, the placebo effect's really real. If you really commit and you believe, it will feel better.
Wow.
So to like create something that circumvents that feeling of like, oh, I think this is going to work, and perform significantly better than that base placebo level is actually very, very hard.
Yeah. So I just found that so fascinating. And I will say with sebum control studies, it is very challenging. Yeah. And you should expect that, you know, to be able to achieve statistical significance is already a win. So to look at like the degree of improvement, I think it's hard here.
Yeah.
So I do have to share the conclusion, which sounds very soft, but now knowing the context, you understand, is topical 2% niacinamide may be effective in lowering the sebum excretion rate in Japanese individuals and casual sebum levels in Caucasian individuals. And that's the conclusion.
And I will say, even though it sounds really lukewarm, sebum level is so hard. Even ingredients that's like marketed and geared towards oily skin concerns, they wouldn't want to do this test just because it's so hard to get anything out of it.
I mean, we should know, I mean, anybody who's looked into oily skin knows that it's very much hormonal as well. A lot of it, topical can only do so much, and that's why a lot of it ends up being cosmetic, where they use mattifying powders, which I don't believe are actually helpful. So, you know, that here's an example of that. So niacinamide, in a sense, at 2% may be helpful. Could be helpful. Yeah. All right.
You gotta believe, though. Really commit to the belief.
There you go. The glorious thing is just believe. Maybe then don't listen to this episode.
You didn't say this was a religious class.
No, I'm thinking, I'm like, maybe you shouldn't have shared this. Just believe, guys. All right. So let's move on to pore reduction. And we have to talk about pore reduction because it's very hard to find any data on any ingredient about pore reduction.
You know, marketing is listening to this like, no, oh, half the products out there tell me I can erase my pores in 7 days. But yeah, no, take it from us. It's very, very difficult to achieve.
I found a study done in Taiwan. So it's 52 subjects. They're enrolled in this double-blind, placebo-controlled, split-face comparative study. They wanted to actually look at kinetin. So this is a combination therapy of kinetin at 0.03% and niacinamide at 4%, whereas group 2 only received niacinamide at 4%. I like the study because the control is niacinamide 4%. So we're trying to beat just niacinamide. Okay, so I'm actually not going to focus on the kinetin results, really. I just want to see the results for 4% niacinamide. I should mention they use this twice a day, and they were also provided sunscreen. All right, so here are the results. And holy crap, as Gloria, yes, you see that anybody watching will see Gloria's face. These bar graphs made my eyes cross. It was so confusing because the bar graphs are categorized by product. And then like the bar graph itself is the time point. So I'm like sitting like, oh my God.
Why would they do that? Okay, guys, I have to say, I think it was one of the earlier episodes this season or this year, someone commented on one of the retinoid graphs we share, and they're like, oh yay, like, you know, I paused and then it turned out I was reading it right. Like, she was very happy that he was interpreting the results right, because he's not used to reading, you know, papers like these. Take it from us. Take your time. Like, it's not just because like you guys are new at this. When it comes to skincare paper, holy crap, the way they do graphical representation is not standardized at all.
No, it's not standardized.
Yeah, every new paper, you're like, why was this the graph of choice?
So, and they took a lot of measurements, like a lot. So they looked at things like wrinkle count, spot count, pore count, evenness.
Wait, hold on. I have to call this out real fast. Change in spot count. If you just look at the bars, you're like, cool, the B3 group and both in the Kinton group, they all decrease the spot. And then you look at the y-axis. I'm like, so you're saying it decreased 2 spots because it's literally spot count minus one, minus two, minus three. So who is counting every spot?
Maybe imagery. We can only hope that it was a computer. So.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So there's a lot going on.
Poor
here.
Count.
Poor count. And
minus 45. That's good.
Yeah. They also looked at change in moisture and change of erythema, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. So. Generally, to sum up, they found persistent and significant reductions in spot, pore, wrinkle, and evenness counts were found at the week 8 and 12 in group 1. So that's the keratin and niacinamide group.
Mm-hmm.
Significant increase in corneal hydration status was also evident at week 12, whereas persistent decrease in erythema index were apparent at 8 and 12. So this is still in regards to group 1. In group 2, significant reductions in pore count and evenness at week 8 and wrinkle counts at week 12 were noted. Mm-hmm. So for niacinamide, they did find that there was benefits for pore count, skin tone, and wrinkles.
Mm-hmm.
And it took about 8 to 12 weeks to see any sign of improvement. And we're going to go back to look at the results to just look at the difference. I have to say, some of these bar counts are crazy. Because...
Is it giving me the finger?
Exactly. So if you look at the evenness count, right? We're going to look at just niacinamide. We're not really sure what happened at week 8, and then suddenly week 12 was just garbage.
It's just like week 8, everyone's like, oh my God, I know this. Yeah, I'm more even. Beach time! I don't understand.
Wild. Wild. And the other thing too is, it's kind of weird, is there are some improvements in the placebo again. Which I thought was kind of funky.
Believe. You gotta believe. We should do a Super Bowl commercial next year where it just sells you an empty bottle. You don't put anything on your face. Just go through the motion of pumping air. Be like, my skin will be more even.
Yes. So I found that generally fascinating. But we can say, yes, so niacinamide does help with pore reduction. Yeah.
So far we've covered a 2% paper, a 4% paper, and let's go to the big dog.
All right.
A 5% paper!
Yes, let's do it. All right. So, this is another very popular paper that gets cited. This is wanting to look at 5% niacinamide, and they tested it on Caucasian female subjects. The ages are between 40 and 60, so mature skin, which I think is good. And they participated in a 12-week split face study. Basically, they use this moisturizer twice a day, and they wanted to look at things like fine lines and wrinkles, hyperpigmentation, texture, and red blotchiness. The other thing that I thought was interesting is they also want to look at skin yellowing, which they tie to like sallowness, which I don't think is looked at very often.
No.
Okay. So anyways, they applied this for 12 weeks, and after 12 weeks, they did find significant improvements in hyperpigmentation, wrinkles, prevention of skin yellowing, and prevention of skin blotchiness. Yeah, and that's the general, it's a very straightforward paper, so that's why I didn't go into it as much, but we'll show some of the results here. But all in all, hopefully that kind of gives you an idea of the benefits of niacinamide between the percentages of 2 and 5% and what it can do for skin. My goal in sharing some of these results, and I know it sounds kind of weird because a lot of it was actually spent on placebo effect, is that one, hopefully you guys all understand the fact that you don't need that much niacinamide.
It's not like we had to sidestep the high concentration papers. It's that those papers don't exist. Most papers you'll find is between the 2 to 5%, and 4% is a very, very common percentage. Yeah. Obviously, we just picked a couple key ones to show some of, to highlight the range of niacinamide's effect in those concentration ranges, but literally there are no papers on like 10, 20, 30% niacinamide.
And so I think to answer the question, are you using too much niacinamide? Probably. Just because of the fact that so many products are including niacinamide, many believe that you should be getting 10% niacinamide. And I did want to share, I was trying to think about, there are a few people who now talk about niacinamide sensitivity.
Yeah.
So I actually did look into the safety assessment report for niacinamide, and I'm going to just share a few quotes that come from it. So one of the things they say and mention is clinical testing of niacinamide produced no stinging sensation at concentrations up to 10%.
Mm-hmm.
Use tests produced no irritation at concentrations up to 5%, and 21-day cumulative irritation tests at concentrations up to 5%. resulted in no irritancy. So hopefully that gives you an idea of the threshold that these safety assessment reports are even looking at. Niacinamide was not a sensitizer, nor was it a photosensitizer. Okay. I do also want to say, the panel noted that the doses in these studies are high relative to the low concentrations at which niacinamide is used in cosmetic formulations.
No longer true! This panel was dumb before The Ordinary came up with that 10% niacinamide guzzler.
So I thought that was kind of fascinating.
Yeah. 5% used to be high. 5% used to be like, oh my god, SkinCircle is so bold to launch 5%.
Yeah. And I think the other thing I was going to mention here is I think the results around niacinamide, while though are significant, and yes, they saw a benefit, I think in terms of overwhelming degree of improvement, I'm not sure.
Actually, you know what? That's really interesting because something that like we, again, I'm going to reference back our retinoid episode, is there's a lot of comparative studies and that doesn't exist in niacinamide. There are very, very few studies that really pit niacinamide against other well-known actives in these different departments. So the way we consider it, even though we put it in our book as one of the big four actives because it has a lot of clinical evidence, is it's almost a helpful psychic for any routine. But is it gonna be your one and done, your main squeeze? Probably not.
Yes, exactly. So I think that's where Gloria and I think when we talk about niacinamide, we're like, it's a good one, but is it
the second coming of Jesus?
Yes. Is it the second coming of skincare Jesus? No, like I don't think the evidence is quite there yet. It's clearly like very beneficial in a lot of different aspects. So nice to have. But yeah, I think that's the sentiment I still have. And I don't know if any of you can chime in as well about your experience with niacinamide. A lot of times, if you just use a skincare routine with just niacinamide, the skin, I don't know. I feel like skin's going to be like, I'm doing okay. I'm doing good.
Maybe today I'll produce a little bit less sebum. Like, whatever.
Yeah. So those are just a few thoughts that I personally have. And I don't know, Gloria, when you use niacinamide, what you generally feel. We can get into it in the routine section, but I just feel like...
This is a preview for a much later episode that we'll do this year. But I probably feel about niacinamide the same way Victoria feels about vitamin C. Kind of like... I know we made a lot of religious jokes this episode.
You just gotta believe.
Yeah, like it's in my routine because I use a Mr. Reliable daily, especially when I'm not testing other moisturizers. Do I think I can't live without it? I don't know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't actively take it out of my routine, but it just doesn't feel like that's the one that I'm like, I'm going to feel the pain of not having.
Yeah, like if you found out in your routine that you've been missing this ingredient all along, you're probably like,
oh no. Anyway. Yeah, exactly. A little bit. And I think for me, as someone with dry skin, the barrier aspect, the ceramide level boosting, whatever aspect is appealing, of course. But at the same time, like when I evaluate moisturizers, ones without niacinamide, does it make me feel like I'm missing out in terms of long-term hydration? No, I think like the humectants and the ceramides and the type of occlusive and the formula, all those to me feel a lot more significant than whether or not it has niacinamide. That's just my experience with it.
Yeah, for sure. We're going to get into more on how to use niacinamide in routine, but we're going to take a quick break with our animal fun fact. Yay! All right. So today is my turn. It's going to be very short and sweet. This is for our trivia night. All right. Your animal fun fact of the day is armadillos have two methods to cross bodies of water. Okay.
Go on.
So, because its shell is so heavy, they will actually sink to the bottom of the stream.
No.
And they will simply walk across the bottom of the stream to get to the other side.
That's adorable.
Okay, that's method one. Uh-huh. The second method is that for wider bodies of water, armadillos will swallow air to inflate their stomachs to twice its normal size.
Oh, that's amazing.
Increasing buoyancy and allowing them to swim across.
Oh, that's adorable.
Yeah, and afterward, it takes them hours to release the excess air by belching. I don't really know, but
anyways. I was like, did they fart it out? Literally just like...
Yeah. So there you have it. That's your animal fun fact of the day. It really reminded me of if you ever played Oregon Trail, you ever have to wade the river with your wagon.
Oh, yeah. It's before like, I get the dysentery. Yeah.
That's what I imagine armadillos are doing. Also, I guess if you see an armadillo try to cross a river and you see it sinking, don't worry, it's not drowning. So
I just picture an armadillo.
Exactly. And you're like, oh my God. It's having a mental breakdown.
What if it's like halfway through, it's like, oh man, should I inflate it? This is a little wider than I thought. God dang it.
Yeah. So there you have it. Your animal fun fact.
You know what? This is fun. This is a lot more fun than like, oh my God, the ecology of Northern Africa is getting screwed by ants. Yeah. Isn't that fun?
Yeah. I was like, for once, let's not bring doom and gloom to the people.
You're right. You're right. Good call. Good call.
Well, also, I was just, yeah, that's just how my brain works. Armadillos, man. They're funny.
That's adorable.
They also give you leprosy.
Oh, but that's a story for a different time.
Okay, all right, AJ's trying to cut us off, so
I feel like there's a joke in there somewhere about why did the armadillo cross the river. Anyway,
all right, we're gonna wrap this up with how to use niacinamide in your routine. And that's gonna be pretty short.
Yeah, just use whatever.
But first thing first, Gloria, I would like to ask you,
yes,
how would you feel if you were given a jar of niacinamide powder?
I would be like, okay. It's not necessary at all. It's in the powder form because niacinamide is very vanilla. It's stable. It's very water soluble. It doesn't need to exist in the powder form. I don't really need to mix it. Like, there's no benefit to it. And odds of you overdoing it with the powder form is really high. So,
yes, 100%. Yes, yeah. Agreed. So, just want to point that out, that if you feel tempted to buy niacinamide powder, please don't. We actually really hate this format.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. And then we're going to, again, remind you guys about 10% niacinamide. That is not the goal. Remember that your goal is between 2 to 5%.
I do want to add that because 10% is such a popular concentration. If you already have that in your routine, it's fine. We're not saying your face is going to fall off in like a month or two. But the thing is, do pay attention to other products you're using because it's also a common ingredient. Maybe one 10% serum isn't going to make or break your skin. You're not getting twice the benefit of 5% niacinamide, but at the same time, if your skin doesn't show irritation, it'll probably be fine too. But if you use it with a niacinamide cream, with a niacinamide cleanser, which exists now apparently, and a niacinamide this and a niacinamide mask, and you don't even realize that you are using so much niacinamide, you could experience irritation. And I have a story of when I did that because I didn't realize, I was just test a bunch of products. And I didn't realize I was testing at least eight different products, all with like 2 to 10% niacinamide. Mm. And at least the symptom I show, it was just a little red in the beginning. I didn't think anything of it. Again, kind of common when you're testing so many products. And then it got scaly. Mm. It was like so dry. It just felt, my skin just all of a sudden felt like sandpaper. And I was like, oh my God, reverse course.
Totally. I think for me, it's when niacinamide's in a cleanser. Uh-huh. I have found like there's, it's not really stinging, but it's like a sensation. I can't help but put my finger on. I can't put my finger on, but yeah, I have noticed that previously. But yeah, I think, and I should also mention when I was going through the safety assessment report, it is not without erythema.
Yeah.
There is actually, at least in every study, I think there's one or two individuals that did experience redness, some sort of irritation. And I just want you to know, so if you feel like you're going crazy, you're like, this niacinamide.
It can be niacinamide.
Yeah, because it's supposed to be a skin barrier helper, right? Yeah. It's supposed to be, you know, super vanilla. Mm-hmm. I think it's totally fine to consider that as a culprit, especially with how much it is in everything.
Yep.
So with that, we have to give a shout out to any product that will give a transparent percentage that's actually at a normal amount.
We have to start out a little self-serving. It is in our specialist, as we mentioned in the break earlier. It's in there at 5%, so it's low enough to use topically directly as a spot treatment. But mostly, if you want to use it as an upkeep, when you dilute it, it will obviously go way up below that. It is also in our Mr. Reliable at just 2%, so kind of at that efficacious but basic level. So even if you mix the specialist with Mr. Reliable, you will not be exceeding or like going way overboard with this ingredient.
Yes, exactly. Other brands that share their percentages are brands like Skin Fix, SkinCeuticals, Medicel, also contains niacin, I believe, at 5%.
Yeah, I think Medicel has 5%. Skin Fix has also a base level of 2%. And I think PCA Skin has a very similar formula to SkinCeuticals Medicel that I think has 6%. Mm. So those are just some of the under 10% options you can consider.
And with that, with this episode, hopefully just take a look at your current routine. Skim the ingredient list and just see how many products contain niacinamide. I think it's a good one to just keep tabs on. So whenever, you know, you decide to start using other actives or it's just you notice any skin irritation, that's just something that you're kind of monitoring. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, I think the one thing just to wrap up is there's definitely a lot of people that probably could use a lot more niacinamide and skin will be fine. So yeah. I think that's the other side of the story too, is that niacinamide is vanilla in that sense, and that you can use a lot, and that's why it's getting abused as it is.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. We're going to wrap up with your questions answered.
Yeah.
There are some really good ones on niacinamide, by the way. I just want to say, like, just within the first 10 questions that were answered, all great ones. So we kind of combine them. So this question comes from at Agabar9. Why is niacinamide so irritating for people with sensitive skin? And at Babemco asks, why burnt like fire? So speaking of.
Yeah, so I mean, long story short, niacinamide can be a skin trigger, absolutely. It could be that it just doesn't work for your skin. Every sensitive skin individual has different triggers. So it could just be the existence of niacinamide is no bueno for you. Or it might burn like fire because you're using way too much niacinamide. That can happen as well.
Yeah. All right. The second question I love. This is from at Bert Murray Snurty. She asks, in your opinion, is niacinamide great for many things or just good for many things?
That's a great question.
I really
question.
Like this question.
I think it's good for many things.
I think good. Yes.
Yeah,
I
good. Agree. It's a solid supporting cast. It's a basic insurance policy, yeah. Like we mentioned. Sprinkle it in. It will enhance your whole routine. Yeah. But is it going to be the one?
I was going to ask you just a follow-up. Is it great for anything?
Oh, no. No, don't say that.
You know how, like, you know, with retinoids, it's the wrinkles, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, is it great for anything? When I think about it, I'm like, I'm not sure.
Actually, I don't know. I feel like, okay, in terms of its supporting role, I will
it
say...
It is great as a supporting role.
Yeah, like, I think, like, it's a very essential... It has a very essential role in something like hyperpigmentation or even in some cases acne, just because there's so few ingredients out there that have any data on sebum production or pore reduction.
That's a good point.
Pore erasing miracles, but yeah. That's one of the few things that does anything. Hyperpigmentation, like we mentioned, it works on a different pathway. So it can really elevate your whole experience with your hyperpigmentation serum. But other than those two things, but again, niacinamide alone isn't going to make you feel great, you know?
Yep. So. 100%. The next question is, niacinamide at 10% is as scary as it's made out to be. Another person asks, can higher percentage be irritating? Notice breakouts at 10% serums, but not others.
It kind of depends on your skin. Listen to your skin. Many, many people tolerate 10% just fine. Again, I wouldn't expect it to give you twice the benefit of a 5% per se, but if your skin can tolerate it, no, it's not scary, and no, it's not going to build out long term to just nuke your face 6 months down the road. But in terms of Johnny Kim's question, yes, high levels doesn't work for everyone. I don't have super sensitive skin, but I have noticed that for me, there's definitely a bit of a threshold with niacinamide.
Totally. All right. So that's it. That wraps up our niacinamide episode. Gloria, where can they find us?
Yeah, you can find us at chemistconfessions.com. You can write to us at info@chemistconfessions.com. Find us on Instagram at chemist.confessions, where you can DM us or find our polls on these podcast questions and get your questions answered.
All right. So hopefully this episode was helpful and we've armed you with enough knowledge as you go out there and shop for your next niacinamide product. We will see you next time. Thank you guys.
Bye-bye.